Welcome to Chevis Talks. In this series, we delve into the world of nearshoring in Mexico. In each episode, we will discuss the impact of nearshoring from key perspectives: corporate, legal, labor, social security, tax, transfer pricing, and foreign trade. Get ready to discover how these insights present opportunities that Mexico offers in the realm of nearshoring.
Hello, welcome to this new episode of Chevis Talks dealing with nearshoring. Today we're going to talk about labor law. So my name is José Carlos Silva. I'm a tax partner here in Chevis, and with me today is Miguel Cantú. Miguel is a labor law partner here in Chevis. And Miguel, we want to talk about the labor law aspects of nearshoring. When I think of labor law, I think of a set of rules that have remained pretty much unchanged in Mexico for decades, but that's not the case anymore. Can you please talk to us about recent changes and trends?
Yes. Thank you, José Carlos, and welcome to everyone. Yes, in fact, the labor law remained without any changes for a long time. And since 2012, there have been a lot of amendments to the labor law. One of the most important one was made back in 2021, which was named the Outsourcing Reform. It was really known in several publications. And this Outsourcing Reform basically prohibits Mexican corporations or individuals from subcontracting or outsourcing personnel, which is defined in the same law as the activity by means of which an individual or a legal person provides or makes available their own employees for the benefit of another person, either through internal or external companies. But at the same time, this reform prohibits the outsourcing of personnel, but they also include a new way to hire corporations or persons that establish the engagement or contract of services that is now called specialized services, which basically are allowed whenever they are not part of the main purpose or the corporate purpose of the company, or they are not their core business. So basically, you can contract these services whenever they're not part of your core business.
So let me see if I understand. So subcontracting or outsourcing is prohibited, which seems to be going against the trend, international trend, but it is anyway banned in Mexico through these set of rules. You cannot outsource personnel, you were saying, unless they are not related to the direct core activities of the companies. And then you can hire, and maybe we can talk a little bit about that. But what if you don't follow these rules? What are the penalties and fines associated with not fulfilling these rules?
Well, there are several penalties and severe penalties. Basically, failure to comply with this new regulation may have as a consequence that payments related to such prohibited services will not be deductible or creditable for purpose of income and value add tax, respectively. Okay. And also, it's very important, also fines and criminal violations are now on the table too as well for the violation of these new regulations.
Okay, so these are serious penalties. But you did mention that companies may, in fact, hire specialized services. Are there special rules for doing this? Do you need to register a company? How does that work?
Yes, indeed. If anyone wants to be a specialized services provider, they have to follow or comply with a lot of requirements and obligations. But the most important one is that they have to register themselves or their corporation before the labor authorities in a register that is known in Spanish, or is better known in Spanish, as REPSE. So yes, in order for you to be a specialized provider, you have to have your REPSE authorization.
Okay, Miguel, thank you. So that was topic number one, which was outsourcing. Now, let's talk about minimum benefits. So you're hiring personnel in Mexico. What are the minimum benefits an employee has?
Yes, as well, the federal labor law is the one that rules the employment relationships in Mexico, and it establishes several minimum benefits for employee, such as salary, Christmas bonus, vacations, vacation premium, mandatory holidays, weekly rest days, the maximum of the work shift, maternity and paternity leave, labor hazards, training, overtime. And one benefit that is not common in other countries, but is a unique one in Mexico, that is the profit sharing of the employer what is entitled to distribute among employees.
Okay, so most of what you mentioned is pretty common in throughout other jurisdictions, but talk to us about this profit sharing.
Well, yes, as I mentioned, it's a unique benefit, is that basically employees in Mexico are entitled to share the employer's profit at the rate of 10% of the pre-tax profits of the employer. But recently, with changes at the law that we were mentioning at the beginning, they capped it, this obligation. So now the obligation, the maximum amount that an employee is entitled to is capped to either to 3 months of the employee's salary or to the average of the profits received by the employee in the last 3 years, whichever is more favorable for the employee.
So this is pretty unique and maybe new to many of our listeners. How about newly formed companies?
Yeah, actually, newly formed companies are exempt from the profit sharing during their first year of operations. So this is a benefit for employees that want to establish a company in Mexico.
And how do you count that period? Do you start counting when you hire the employee?
Yeah, it's whenever you register the company, and basically you are starting operations for the Mexican authorities.
So this is interesting. You have to be very careful then as to setting up the company. You don't want to wait a long time until you start operations. When you register the company, your 1 year holiday for profit sharing starts to compute, right?
Yeah, and exactly. And it's regardless of the number of employees that you have. So if you have 10 employees, they're going to be entitled to the 10%. But yeah, for the first year, they're exempt of paying that. But if regardless of whenever you hire your first employees, it's counted from the day that you registered the company, you start operations in Mexico.
Okay, thank you, Miguel. That was clear. How about the union environment? Again, this is something that's, in my mind, was not very on top of mind of companies. There's several industries that were very sensitive to the topic, but I understand the union environment is also changing due to these new set of rules that are in place.
Yeah, once and again, we have a new rule, a new law for union relationships. There used to be these so-called white unions and
soft unions.
You know, soft union, white unions, and the protective collective bargaining agreements. But now the rules change. And basically now whenever a union evidence the representation of at least 30% of the unionized employees, the employee will be obligated to negotiate and eventually execute a collective bargaining agreement with the union that has this 30% of representation. Once the CBA is duly registered and executed and registered before the labor authorities, you have to review every year regarding wages and every 2 years regarding the full context of the agreement. But now with the new rules, employees have to approve the content of the CBA. So it's different from the past. Because the employees they used to negotiate in a shorthand with the unions. Now you have to negotiate with the union because they represent the employees. But then the union has to pass this agreement before the employees, and they have to approve it. So now they're giving more power to employees in order to approve what is negotiated between employees, employers, and unions.
And what you have just mentioned is across all industries and across all lines of business in Mexico.
Yeah, it's applicable to every business in Mexico.
So absolutely, that's something new. All right, changing gears, let's talk about home office, teleworking. What are the regulations in Mexico?
Well, there are new regulations as well. Since COVID, we discovered that we have to regulate this. It was something for a long time that we were thinking about it, but they didn't do it. But now it's included in the law and basically defines teleworking as whenever an employee develops more than 40% of their time working in places other than the employer's establishment or the facilities of the employer, using primarily the information and communication technologies of the employer. So that's is defined in the law. And this teleworking should not be occasional. Also, it cannot be sporadic. It has to be permanent. And it has to be or must be agreed on writing.
Okay. And what are the consequences for the employer? What do they have to give to the employer?
Yeah, there are a lot of new obligations for the employers. Well, but basically, they have to provide install and take care of all the maintenance of the necessary equipment for the teleworking. So they have to provide the work tools, right? Such as computer equipment, ergonomic chairs, printers, phone, even if probably nobody uses it, but
I was going to say, yes.
They have to provide that too as well, among other things. They have to assume the cost derived from the work of teleworking, like the internet cost, the electricity cost too as well. And they have to implement mechanisms that preserve the security of the information and the data used by the employees. So the cybersecurity, they have to have protocols and programs installed in the computers, and they have to provide all these to the employees.
So what you're saying clearly here is that cyber attacks are the responsibility of the company, and therefore you have to provide the employee with all the necessary tools. And it's not on the employee's fault. It's all
Yes, but at the same time, the employees are obligated to comply with all the politics and the protocols that the employer established too as well. So it's both ways.
How about calling an employee in the middle of the night?
That's a good question. Yes, the employers have to respect the right to disconnect of the employees. So as I mentioned it before, the agreement, there have to be an agreement for teleworking. And in that agreement has to establish the work shift or the working hours that the employee is going to be available for the employers. And not because the employee is working at home, it means that he is 24/7 available for the employer. So we have to respect the right to disconnect of the employees.
All right, thank you. Let's move on. Two more topics. One, talking about nearshoring means new companies, new employment relationships. Are there any rules dealing with expats?
Actually, there's not. The Federal Labor Law does not have any special regulation or consideration for expats employees in Mexico. On the contrary, if a person renders services in Mexico in which the person performs subordinate work for another person or another business entity, then the law considers them employees, and they, regardless of their nationality, and therefore they are entitled to the same benefit or the minimum benefits that the other Mexican employees. And also, employers have to consider that there is a restriction on the number of foreign employees that you can hire. You must have at least 90% of your employees have to be Mexican, and you can only hire 10% of foreign employees.
That's an interesting rule, and I'm that's going to be very difficult to navigate as companies start business. So you start a company, I understand the managers and the top management does not count on these rules, but if you hire three personnel or four people to work for you, how's it 90% rule is going to work? It's going to be very difficult to navigate.
It's going to be very difficult, but as you mentioned it, yes, the main person in the company or the highest ranking person in the company is not included in this percentage.
Okay.
Percentage. So you can have your general manager or your director of the company in Mexico being a foreign, and he's not going to count in this 10% that has to be, or the 90% that has to be Mexican.
Okay. Well, I think what we're going to ask you next to wrap up our episode is the future. What other changes do we visualize in the future? Are there now other ideas sitting in Congress?
Yeah, there are a lot of projects right now in the Congress to amend different laws, being the most significant ones, that the reduction of the work shift. They want to, there are several also project of bills regarding this specific topic, but basically what they want to do is to deduct the number of hours that employees are mandatory can work in Mexico, from 48 to 40 hours per week. And there's another project to increase the Christmas bonus from 15 days to 30 days.
Okay.
And also to increase the vacation premium that employees are entitled to. And there are several other projects there at Congress that could be part of another episode. But for now, the most important ones that we visualize in the near future are these ones.
So I think that the message you're conveying is you need to keep a close eye on what comes out of Congress in terms of labor law, because it is a changing environment, as we talked at the beginning of the project. With this, we end the labor law episode of our series. And Miguel, I thank you. It was very clear, and I had a good time talking to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much to you, and thank you to our listeners too as well.